You're listening to the Punk News Podcast for the week of May 27th, 2014. Hey, everyone. You're listening to the Punk News Podcast. This is Adam White. I'm recording in my basement with a cup of tea here in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show, I assume in their basements with their own cups of tea. We have Mr. Ricky Frankel, staff reviewer out there in Los Angeles, California.
How's it going?
How are you?
Good, good. Everything's just got back home from school, enjoying myself. You know, excited to be here.
Do you have a tea?
I do not have a tea with me.
Oh, I should have. This whole thing isn't going to be a bit, is it? That's just fine. All right. So anyways, joining me in, I'm going to assume Philadelphia right now, John Gentile, the polarizing. I'm going to leave it with that. You're polarizing, John.
I'd rather be polarizing than non-arising every day of the week. You know, Adam, that's pretty a privilege of you. We don't have tea in Philadelphia, FYI. So check your privilege at the door,
yes.
Please.
I'm sorry, John. I don't remember where you're from. Well, you came on the other coast. If you were in your other home over in Northern California or whatever the hell you go a lot of the times, you would have had tea, right? Like,
yeah, they have tea there.
Yeah. All right, and joining me on tonight's show, a special guest, someone we've never had on the podcast before. She records a much better show than ours out of Toronto called Everything in the Kitchen Sink, which you can find at eatks.net. You can find her show there. We have Nikki. Hi, Nikki.
Hi. Yes, and I'm not drinking tea either. I'm drinking coffee because shame on you all for drinking tea. Damn you.
Well, no one is except for me. I just take whatever's going on in my life or in my basement, I guess, and extrapolate it to what everyone else is doing. And it apparently didn't work. So, yeah. So,
now the question is, what cup are you drinking out of? Is it the Descendants cup? Did you finally get that?
Well, you know what? I had a client that I would, or a client, I guess, like a colleague. I don't know what you call him. I'm a web designer. I have a graphic designer who I love and I do a lot of work for. And we had a mutual client, one of his, that was really giving it to me. And he saw me on Twitter pleading for someone to buy me the Descendants bonus cup out of the goodness of their heart. And he did, because he knew how much I had suffered for this project. So it's in the mail. I'm really happy about that.
That's exciting.
I'm usually drinking coffee all day out of like a beer stein at work, so I'm going to have to, I guess, switch now. But what do you do? So anyways, we have one more thing on the show that is really cool and really important and everyone should stick around for, and or you know, fast forward over all this shit and then you can get to it really quick. At the end of the show, we're going to post a 6 or 7 minute long interview with Mr. Keith Levine of Early Clash of Public Image Limited, who's working on some stuff in the studio, and we talked to him about it. John, do you talk to him?
I talked to him. It was pretty. Right now, as listeners might know, Keith Levine is recording Commercial Zone 2014, which is supposedly a finished version of the Commercial Zone album by Pill from 1983, I think it was. So we called him up in Prague, baby, in Prague, and we talked to him while he was recording the album. And actually, you can hear him tuning his guitar while we talked to him. So make sure you stick around for that, because it's pretty cool to talk to him. Keith Levine, who's a punk legend, who's a very important in the post-punk realm, what he's up to in the studio right now and what he's got coming out. And he was cool.
That's exciting. I'm excited.
That is exciting.
Fast forward to minute 42, and that's where that'll be. I don't actually know that. Okay, so we're going to jump through a bunch of stories and stuff that happened this week. First of all, the Against Me Arcade Fire debate, I guess we'll call it that, has continued. So earlier on, did we talk about it in last week's show?
We did not.
Did not. Okay. No. So basically, Arcade Fire posted a video for a song called We Exist. And it features Andrew Garfield, the guy who plays Spider-Man. Is that who's in it?
Yeah.
Someone? Yes. Okay. There we go. It features Andrew Garfield in it. And Andrew is playing a trans person. Now, Andrew is not a trans person. So Laura Jane Grace of Against Me came out and said that, hey, you know what, it would be kind of cool that if you're going to do this video that's very supportive of GBLT people and trans people, that you could have actually got a trans person to be in the video. And this started a little bit of a public back and forth between Arcade Fire and Against Me's Laura Jane Grace online. So the latest in this is that Arcade Fire frontman Wynn Butler reacted to the comments. Now, in an interview with The Advocate, he stated, "Once something gets on the internet, it works its way into people's lives in a way that I think is pretty powerful. For a gay kid in Jamaica to see the actor who played Spider-Man in a role that is in that role is pretty damn powerful, in my opinion. There was just so much thought and love that went into that video that I personally don't see it as negative." Now, Laura responded to this. I'm not going to go through her whole response here because it's big, but you can find it on Punk News. Basically, Laura says the article is hella problematic. I'm gonna give her a pass for saying hella, but I would normally criticize that. The implication that a homeless Jamaican LGBT youth living in a sewer is gonna feel empowered because a cis straight white male actor in movies they can't afford to see stars in a music video they'll never watch. My problem with the video isn't even its casting, it's stereotyping. Why does Garfield cry about shaving their head and then put on a wig when they have gorgeous hair? Why does Garfield go to the shittiest bar ever to drink domestic beer and dance with bigot rednecks? Why is the idea that a band playing Coachella is their mecca of acceptance and validation? Poof. Or fiff. Or I don't know how you pronounce that. Someone? Oh, people in your phonetic word spelling. Anyways, there's more on there. So there's a little bit more that actually came up. Laura later posted that she had just talked with Our Lady J about her involvement in the Arcade Fire video, and her perspective really made me think about it differently. So this is an evolving thing, but this is one of those stories that everyone decided to chime in on and to have an opinion about. And it bears mentioning here. I'm not quite sure where we go with it, but
can we just tell people not to read the comments on the website?
We always advise not to read
the comments. That's one of the reasons why I brought this up. If you read the first article, I actually thought the comments were exactly what I hoped for from Punk News. They were actually like really thoughtful and well put out. So if you go to the article, which is like 190 comments, people are having like an open and honest, genuine debate here. I mean, of course, there's a little shit talk, but who cares? I mean, people were like really thought about this.
I actually, on the first story, I was, I noticed that too. And also I was commenting a lot as well, but I wasn't taking anyone on about their shit talking or anything like that.
Don't take the bait of the trolls. Like, just no. never.
So I guess our poor commenters aside, I don't feel that I necessarily need to weigh an opinion in on this. I don't know if that's a cop out or something like that, but I can kind of see from both perspectives here. Like I have a feeling that the Arcade Fire wasn't trying to necessarily be malicious or anything with what they were doing. But, you know, good on Laura Jane for calling them out on it, I guess. But is there a victor in this kind of thing? Like,
society.
I don't know. Yeah.
No, society. No, you know what? No, I think it's kind of interesting that you have one band who's trying to propose an idea, right? And it's may not necessarily be the greatest idea out there, but what happens is that what it should do is, instead of creating a judgment, and I don't think necessarily Laura Jane Grace I don't know if she's necessarily maybe creating a judgment, but more of maybe constructive criticism on how it could have worked better for things, if you put it in that perspective, and that, you know, the next time that somebody does this, to make it a little bit more challenging, to make it to be something else. I don't know. I'm trying to wing with it. I can see both sides. I can see how somebody's attempting to do something, and I can see how somebody's attempting to do something, maybe not the greatest, but at least there's a thought there, and it wasn't a malicious thought at all. Do you know what I'm saying? Does that make any sense whatsoever?
Yeah. I think people were missing the timing of this video. I kind of like looked through Arcade Fire, because I'm not really a fan. I'm not a fan of theirs, but what I noticed is they released this album in, October of last year, and what I was a little bit, what I kind of found was that, you know, The Amazing Spider-Man was probably just being finished. And is it really a coincidence that The Amazing Spider-Man 2 just comes out a couple weeks before this video comes out? I asked the question on the first story of this, whether Arcade Fire even had the choice of having Andrew in there or not. I wonder if it was just them being just a major label intrusion saying, we're going to have this star in there so we can have more tickets for your shows being sold, more views of this video being on YouTube, and more movie tickets to be sold. I really question the timing of this video a lot. And if Arcade Fire really had a choice in the matter of having Andrew Garfield in there or not.
Yeah, well, actually, that's a great point in that, like, a lot of times, especially on major labels, like, bands really have very little control over what their video is. Sometimes they're not even a part of it at all. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know about that here or not. I thought about this a lot, and honestly, I kind of agree with Arcade Fire. I don't think Arcade Fire were, like, making fun of trans people, and I don't think they were being spiteful. So Laura Jane Grace, who stated herself, she kind of changed her opinion. She seemed to be saying that, why don't you get an actual trans person to be the actor? Well, I think it's a dangerous route to go down to require actors to be the background of the person they're actually portraying. And well, I think that would lead to more discrimination than it would fight against, which seemed to be the central core of the argument.
And one of the
I'd be actually really curious what she would have to say about Danko Jones' video Legs. Have you ever seen that one? It's actually produced.
ZZ Top Legs.
No. Danko Jones, his video is actually produced and directed by Bruce LaBruce, and the whole cast is transgendered, and that was actually put out. It was last year, and I think it was in December of last year. So it'd be interesting what her take would be on that.
Well, I think also one of the commenters, I forgot who, one of the commenters said that should we you know, chastise Sean Penn for portraying Harvey Milk in Milk, even though he's not gay.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was a really good point, too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of people reflecting on themselves, F'd Up, our streaming record, which is due out June 3rd, which will be the time you hear it. The new record's called Glass Boys. I know Adam and I have been hyping this record. Did you guys check out this album? Was it what you expected it to be? It was pretty much what I expected it to be. I dug it.
As soon as I listened through it, I bought the ticket for the El Rey show. So
really?
Good. Yeah.
There's actually a little update to this since we last posted the story. The story that we posted was that the stream is up on CBC Music, and it is. Now, it's only up until June 3rd, so hopefully someone hears the show before then. But the slow version of the record is up on Exclaim right now.
Oh, very clever. Yeah. Maybe listeners don't know, there's actually two versions of this record that you get if you buy the deluxe version. There's the regular version, which I think is either 10 or 12 tracks. Then with the deluxe version, it's the same album, except for instead of having the normal drum tracks by Jonah Falco, the drums are at halftime to give it like a real trippy sound. And actually, Adam, I have not checked out the trippy version as of yet.
Nor have I. So I got to get that.
I saw the link as I, like, 4 seconds ago as I was ignoring everyone and looking around on the internet. So, yeah, it's there. So we'll all hear that later. I've enjoyed this. I've played it through, I want to say, like, two or three times right now. Not, like, streams are never the best for me to kind of get into something, only because, especially something like this where it's streaming on a website, because, like, I tend to be, like, half distracted as I'm listening to it, and I'm probably in my office, so it's not like, you know, and cranked up or anything like that. So it's just sort of background noise. So it's going to be one of these records where, like, for me to really, really sit down and get into it and maybe, like, compare and contrast with some of the past stuff that they've done, I'm going to need to actually sit down and, like, pay serious attention to it. But that said, it's fucked up. I'm happy with it from what I've heard so far. And, I'm actually really looking forward to actually being able to, you know, give it time.
Yeah, I think this was very much a tactical strike, and the band has talked about this. And like, their first album was a double LP. Second album was a double LP, a concept record in the truest sense, in that it wasn't a story, but it dealt with a concept throughout the album. The third album was our modern conception of a concept album, which was a story. So they really face a definite divide here. Do they just want to do a, quote, regular, you know, 10, 12-track album without one solid theme? Or do they want to, I guess, back themselves into a corner to always do, you know, weirder albums? So they went for the route that I think gives them a wider range of things that they can do in the future. Although I am kind of disappointed that they didn't go with Damien Abraham's idea. Damien Abraham's idea at the very beginning of Glass Boys was to have two records and have he write all of one and have Mike Halichuk write all of the second. And I thought that would have been a very crass like move.
Oh, crass, wow, the band. Yeah.
Cool.
And yeah. That every album has a conceptual idea to it, or, you know, with Crass, their singles are almost their albums, and their albums are something bigger than that. And I thought that's what Effed Up was going towards, and I thought that would have been cool. Didn't happen, but I thought this record was cool. If you ask me, it's like a slim version of Chemistry of Common Life, or exactly halfway between Chemistry of Common Life and David Comes to Life, one LP. Yeah. It's cool. If you like Effed Up, you'll like it. Don't know if it's going to change anybody's mind, though, about the band.
Yeah, see, I think that if it would have been better for the route that they have gone. I think it might have been. I don't see many bands trying to do the stuff that Crass did and having different, I don't know, different concepts and albums. If they want to equate it to sales, it doesn't necessarily work well. It's messed up for a lot of other bands. So, yeah, I'm excited to hear the half tempo one. That should be interesting.
I know, we should cancel this thing and go listen to that.
Can we do that?
In a way, that almost is like a crap.
You know what? I kind of wanted to suggest that, or we could even just listen to it on the show, but, you know, I didn't want to be that guy.
Well, we'll just all be quiet for the next 40 minutes.
Have any of you guys ever been to like a listening party at a bar or whatever? Is that like super awkward? I've never been to one.
I've never been to a listening party, no.
Do those still happen? I feel like they happened a lot in the 90s.
They don't happen as often. They usually mix them with listening parties / release parties now. So
yeah.
So when they come out with a new album.
Are you supposed to be quiet?
No, it's kind of like, it's just like basically like a DJ kind of thing, right? So somebody puts it on, you know, on the little turntable, and you drink, and then you listen, and I guess you have conversations. I don't know. I'm assuming that's what happens.
I imagine everyone's got
you
a drink.
You know what? We can have our own.
Everyone, like, someone shuffles their glass or something too much, and everyone else is like, shh. It's like, it's a listening party. Shut up.
But do you know what would be? That would be a fun concept, having a listening party podcast. No? Come on, it'd be funny.
Actually, I'm not going to name names, but the worst interview I ever did, or second worst interview I ever did, was a guy who was supposed to have a listening party on his Twitter the night beforehand. And
What? How do you have a listening?
Well, like you go to his Twitter and you like click on a link and it takes you to some website that he had. So I call the next day I've got the interview. I'm like, yeah, so how'd the listening party go? And he goes, terrible. It crashed. And we just got off on a terrible foot. And that was the worst interview I ever had. Speaking of people that aren't having bad interviews, Bad Cop have released a lyric video for their song, It's My Life. It's not a Billy Joel cover. It's not a Bon Jovi cover. It's an original. But Bad Cop recently signed to Fat Wreck. And there's a lot of hype up around this band. They're down in L.A. It's four young ladies and they do kind of a pop punkish kind of music. And I thought it was cool, man. Ricky, I think you've seen them, haven't you?
I reviewed the Fat 7-inch and I saw them open for Me First and the Gimme Gimmes. And these ladies put on a really good show. I was impressed. But I didn't think the video itself was anything. I mean, I'm not really a big fan of lyric videos, so.
No decent person is.
Okay, well then I feel good about that. They're cool. I go see them if you can.
I gotta say, like, despite my well publicized disdain for lyric videos, this is the only one that I actually found myself watching once I realized it was a lyric video, mainly because it wasn't just like, you know, someone went into, I don't even know what do video people use, went into like After Effects or something and just like wrote a bunch of words on the screen. It was, you know, they tried.
Yeah, they tried. Exactly.
There was some coordination and like humans in the video and stuff like that. So I don't know. It was, the video was kind of cute for being a music video, or for being a music, for being a lyric video, which is generally horrible. I never heard this band before. I wasn't even aware that they had signed to Fat, but this is what I get for not actually reading our own website. So yeah, this could be fun. I mean, I definitely can kind of see there's a kinship between like this and the band we're going to talk about in a few minutes.
Napalm Death. Yeah.
Napalm Death. That I think would be, is an interesting, I guess, turn for Fat from a sound perspective, but I don't want to draw, make a pattern out of two things. But
Now I should have done my homework, because I didn't have a chance to check out that video, and now you're associating Napalm Death with it. Fuck. Ah, damn it.
Check out the EP if you can. There are, I don't think this was the strongest song on the EP. There's a song called My Rodeo, which I think is a lot better.
I dug this video, honestly, because it really had that 80s mainstream music video feel to it, like Fight for Your Right to Party. I think we're at a very interesting intersection now, where because technology is so cheap, you can actually make like a funny, silly music video like they used to in the 80s for like almost nothing. When I watched this, I thought back to the Bomb the Music Industry video, where they're like all hanging out on the beach and like having fun and stuff. Like, I really, like, honestly, this might be my favorite video. Like, instead of having like a bunch of special effects and crap, it's just people like hanging out, having fun. And like they tell a story within that context. So I thought this video was cool. I hope we get more videos like this, particularly from bands like this.
All right, cool. Well, we'll move on here to Joyce Manor. They, who have recently signed to Epitaph Records, as we've discussed in the past, they announced a big headlining tour of the U.S. and Canada in support of their upcoming record, Never Hungover Again, which is due out on June 22nd of 2014. They're kicking this thing off in Toronto. They're going to play the Toronto Urban Root Festival on July.
Turf.
Yeah, that's right in your well, there's two things in Toronto, actually. They're playing that on the 5th, and then they're hopping up to Ottawa for Ottawa Blues Fest, and then they're back in Toronto on the 7th for a set at Lee's. So anyways, after all the Toronto stuff, they're abandoning Canada like all bands do, and then going to everywhere. It's funny because like this is one of these tours, and we do this, and we're so guilty of this. Like, Aubin was from Toronto, but he's guilty of this too. It probably makes sense why this happens, is that like a band will play two cities in Canada, and then we'll say like, this band is playing Canada, and then everyone in Halifax gets really mad. So anyways.
Wait, if you look.
Oh, Vancouver. Whoa.
Vancouver, what?
Wow, huh,
yeah,
fuck them.
Yeah.
So, anyways, after all of this, they get on the road. They're playing throughout a few dates in August, all throughout September, wrapping up at San Diego in October. So you can go to Punk News and search for Joyce Manor, and you'll find all those dates and all that stuff. Some of these dates are supporting Brand New. So, yeah, there you go. I guess I don't know what opinions you have on tour dates that exist, but
well, are people getting hyped for the album? Because I mean, this is a highly anticipated. Did we talk about this last week? Is this a highly anticipated album?
I've made my criteria for what I like about Joyce Manor and how they could totally get fucked up known. And I mean, so far out of the one song that I've heard from this record, it seems like they're staying in my good books. Which is, I really like this band if they're playing songs that are like a minute and a half long and seem like they cut off before the chorus comes back again. Like I like this band's sense of brevity, and I hope they keep that. What worries me about them being on Epitaph is that, like, you know, they get thrown in the room with a producer that's like, you know, yeah, that lo-fi 1 minute pop song thing was great, but what if it was 4 minutes and had a huge bridge here and a solo and all this stuff that I think would totally ruin them.
Gonna go all Ronnie Radke on their ass.
Yes.
I remember I saw this band, Gnar Boots, and Classics of Love, and Joyce Manor headlined over Classics of Love, and I was furious.
Really? Why?
Because it's Jesse Michael. It's Pay Respect.
Who cares? I mean, you know what? I mean,
who cares? I care. It's Jesse Michaels.
I mean, John,
headlining over Jesse Michaels is Keith Morris or the Melvins, and that's about it.
You know what, John? I'm going to tell you something very interesting. You know, back in the because we're all, I'm assuming that we're all kind of old, right? Right? Yeah. Okay.
Ricky's like 12, honestly.
You're 12. Are you allowed to stay up past this time? No, but I just headlining bands. I mean, the idea of headlining bands is not that big of a deal anymore. Like a lot of the bands that I've talked to and stuff like that, really, it's just about getting out there and getting on stage. Because the headlining bands, what happens is that, you know, they want to go on first so that they can drink, so that everybody and watch everybody else. That's why they go on headline sometimes. I don't, I think that headlining is just, I think it's just a big, I don't know. I don't see it. Everybody should just go to a show. That's it.
I'm saying when Jesse Michaels is in the house, a man that has created genres, a man who at 18 was writing better lyrics than Tom Waits at 60, you let that guy be the headliner. That's what I'm saying. Jesse Michaels.
You keep making pronouncements on this podcast that are just nigh mind-bogglingly. I mean, like they're almost, I don't think on a punk
podcast no, it's mind-boggling John, to say John Jesse Michaels by. Is better than Tom Waits.
This stand
is
by.
No, but I mean,
this is an old dude drinking whiskey in a Cadillac.org.
No, I'm just. Wasn't it a show ago that you made some
Danzig.
Danzig is Steve Jobs comparison.
I just listened to the last episode this afternoon. I was cracking up.
I stand by when 100%. I heard that. I mean, I'm not even trying to be funny or outrageous. I'm dead serious about that.
And that's what we love about you, John. Actually, it's one of the reasons why I listen to the podcast.
I'm actually surprised like people are that surprised by it. Like, I mean, Danzig is like the greatest songwriter of all time. Like, seriously.
Oh, okay. No, but you have a right to your opinion, and I love that you stand by it.
All right, let's take a quick break, play a song, and then come back. So I got this one. So this will be quick, and then we'll get back here. This is Sonic Avenues out of Montreal off their Dirt Nap Records released record Mistakes. The song is called Automatic. It's great. The record's great. So there you go.
Digging the Sonic Avenues. Honestly, most stuff on Dirt Nap is pretty good. I mean, that label's got a pretty good track record.
I rarely hear anything on Dirt Nap that I'm not into.
Well, fair enough. And that was Sonic Avenues on Dirt Nap Records. Next, this is a highly anticipated release. This was so highly anticipated, we ran three reviews of the same album, one by Mark, one by Tori, and one by Greg. Masked Intruder are now streaming their new release, M.I., and by now it's been released. It is out May 27 on Fat Records. Nikki, are you down with the Mass Intruder? Because more and more they're becoming divisive. Divisive.
Who?
Divisive.
You know what? I saw Mass Intruder last year, and they actually put on a really, really good show. So I was very impressed with them. I own a couple of their albums. I actually watched this, and I kind of liked it. It's a little poppy for me, though, but I think that there's a need for a poppy punk because, you know, it's better than the other stuff that's out there. Because, you know, I have a five-year-old. He might listen to this. You never know. Just if I can't get him into the Clash, I got to get him into something, right? So that's my story.
If you can't get him into Clash, you have to get him into an adoption home. Okay. I hate to be the guy. I didn't really like this. I really like the idea of Masked Intruder, and there's so much about them that I'm for. I'm very pro a lot of the stuff about this band.
Like what?
I don't know. Like their shtick, I think, is super fun. That's great. Their first EP that came out, I was a fan of, but I was a fan of the stuff that was on there that sounded a little bit more like, say, like Teenage Bottle Rocket than the stuff that was on there that sounded more like them doing sappy love songs. Now, the sappy love songs thing is sort of taken over, and that's their thing. And I have a feeling that they're incredibly fun live. I've never actually seen them live, and I think that a lot of this stuff probably translates really well live. When they're there and they're wearing their masks and they're goofing around and they're playing these love songs, like, I think the whole thing actually works. But for me to just, you know, stop listening to the stream of the new Fucked Up album and then to turn this on and to have it without all that context around it, it's just like, it's poppy enough that it's the kind of thing that, like, when the pop punk boom was happening, this was the kind of thing that I was thumbing my nose at, right? Like,
come on, pop punk has been around, like, Ramones are pop punk, so.
No, but I'm saying, like, in that kind of, like, late 90s post Blink-182, everyone's on the bandwagon to try to make money thing, where everyone had, like, a shitty pop punk band at that point. It was like, you know, I would have heard, like, 10 bands a week that sounded like this, and I didn't want to listen to any of them. But, like, this band comes along and, you know, I get that they're super fun and everything like that and that they're in on the joke and all of that. But if you take all the context away, it's still kind of music that I'm probably not going to listen to as opposed to something else. I don't know. And I feel like a total dick saying that because, like,
oh, no.
Because I'm sure that, like, and I hate to say, I'm sure that they're great guys. And I'm sure that, like, most of my friends who are in the punk news world are really infatuated with this band. And I wish them all the luck in the world, but I can't get over the fact that, like, I finished listening to the stream and I thought to myself, I'm not going to listen to that again.
Okay. But you know what, Adam, I'll tell you the funniest, I enjoyed it, but I was enjoying it from a humorous perspective. I was killing myself laughing at the lyrics. Like when they had Care Bear, I was like, oh, that's too funny. So, I mean, maybe some people are just taking it a little too serious. Maybe they're like the love song satire. Do you think that's possible? Do you think that it's just maybe satire? We should ask them that, shouldn't we?
I'm entirely willing to bet that I am just like a dried up husk of a human being that can't find the joy in this. And I do not doubt that the joy is there. So, like, I encourage the world to go listen to Masked Intruder and to buy their records and to go to their shows and to just revel in the joy of them. But my heart is black and I just don't care.
I was kind of where you were, Adam, until I saw them live.
See?
And I got to tell you, man, they were hysterical between songs. Their banter was so funny. And I got to tell you, they put on a really good show, and they don't screw around with the song live. They do it as if you're listening to I think their songs are better live, actually. If you're there and you see what's going on, you can really get into it. And I thought, and I actually started noticing that about just like Ramones core bands like this. Until I saw Teenage Bottle Rocket, I really wasn't into that, but they put on a really good show. And it's more of just about fun than, you know, beating the shit out of someone in the circle pit. It's just, you know, it's a little more lighthearted. But no, I don't mind this band. It's funny. My dad heard me listening to it and he's into them now. So, and he's 57. So
yeah, I'm totally convinced that I'm in the wrong about this, but I can't I can't get there. They need to show up live and win me over, and then I'll be fine.
Yes, go see them. Because really,
like on paper, this is totally the kind of music that I
need.
You need
to be in a different city than Niagara.
No, you cannot just absorb the rest of Canada. This is not fair.
I'll kind of back Adam on this
I'm sorry. Toronto's the universe of Canada. That's how it works.
The band kind of rocks. It's just that like it's just too sugary and too sweet. It almost sounds like what you would expect MTV's version of punk rock to be in the 90s. You know, I think if it just had a little bit more kick to it, and I think it'd be a much more interesting group if they had, like, maybe these sweet, sugary songs, but a couple of songs where they go really dark. They're almost forgetting that they're, like, bad guys, and they're just saying, oh, baby, I love you, when they're bad guys that commit, you know, felonies and break in and maybe even threaten people's lives. So I think if they put that in there, the music would be a lot more interesting.
Well, I think eventually, I mean, clearly this will be long down the road, but I think if they do their 30 LP, that'll be interesting because I don't know how much longer their fans are going to keep saying are going to keep wanting to listen to those love songs that, you know, are mixed in with, like, you know, robbing someone. I think eventually they're going to have to, you know, mix it up a little bit. So I would guess they could go darker.
Well, speaking of things going darker, if you ever watch a Rancid music video in Timovision, the entire thing is dark because they like to film everything in high contrast. And along those lines, there's a Rancid tribute album coming out with a lot of fairly big names. The tribute album is going to include Kepi Ghouli. It's going to include Anti-Flag. It's going to include Street Dogs. It's going to include Left Alone. It's going to include The Triggers, Coffin Cats, Phenomenauts, Death by Stereo, The Interrupters, Manic Hispanic, Mustard Plug, The Briggs,
Voodoo Glow
Skulls, Kevin Seconds, Biggie and the Kids Table, and Anti-Flag doing Maxwell Murder. Like, I thought like the Rancid train was over. Oh, no one knows when this is coming out, but it's probably coming out kind of soon. It's going to be out on Smelvis and Hellcat Records. Even the bands don't know when it's coming out, but it'll probably be a double disc. I thought the Rancid train had pretty much run out. People weren't that much into Rancid. But when people saw this, I mean, this was a really popular article, and people got really excited for a Rancid tribute album, particularly with these bands. I do think the Kepi pick is an inspired choice.
Yeah, this is an interesting, I don't know, like, whenever I see something like this, especially when it's like a tribute to a popular band on a label that I'm not quite sure who the label is, and there's not a lot of info about it. Yeah, I'm not super familiar with that. Is that like a... Yeah, so like, whenever I see one of these things, like, I'm worried that it's like one of those cash grabby tributes. Yeah. But I mean, like, they've got a lot of like bands that know and respect Rancid involved in this. So it must be on the up and up, but I don't know, that's my immediate reaction to it. Some of these songs, I think I'm looking at the list here and I almost want to say like the stuff that looks like it would interest me the most are the songs that are not from, I want to say like that are not from Outcome the Wolves, because like I can pretty much like I know what Street Dogs, Avenues and Alleyways is going to sound like. It's going to sound like the Street Dogs playing Avenues and Alleyways, right? Like, it's one of those things. But looking at, say, like, where is it here? Like the Briggs, who I thought were broken up or whatever, the Briggs playing like Who Would Have Thought? Like, that's kind of interesting to me. You know, anything that's out of like the Life Won't Wait or like the Rancid 5 era that's on here, they seem a little bit more interesting. I don't know. That might hold my interest. Like Anti-Flag playing Maxwell Murder, like, aside from hearing them do the bass line at the start of that, like, that's not really that super interesting to me. I don't know. I feel that like song choice makes a big deal here. And there are interesting Rancid songs that you could take and reinterpret in a cool way. Voodoo Glow Skull is playing The Brothels, which is a B-side, which is kind of like a funky, is it organ driven? I want to say it's organ driven.
No,
there's a siren in it.
No, it's pretty hard. I mean, it's off one of the Hellcat releases. To me,
yeah, it is. Lars sings it, right? No, he doesn't. Tim sings it. Shit.
Yeah, it sounds like a UK 82 track.
Yeah, so I mean, like that seems like kind of cool. Kevin Seconds playing Salvation actually is kind of interesting because
that would be interesting.
I don't, you know, I've got to imagine that he's not gonna do it straight. I feel like he's not just gonna sit there with an acoustic guitar and like you know and do those big slides and everything that are in that song. I just don't think that's how it's going to play out. I don't know. This is more I'm looking at this list of bands, and I'm surprised that some of these bands still exist, because I feel that I haven't heard about a lot of them in a long time. Like The Forgotten, like that's kind of cool. I didn't know The Forgotten were still around. Death by Stereo is still a band.
I didn't even know that. If you, I don't, if you have, go and check out, who's it? Go and you can actually, they've got a Facebook page now. For Hooligans United Rancid tribute record, and it was Mustard Plug who put out the link on Twitter, and apparently they've added Rat City Riot. I don't even know who that is. And they've got another song, and they've already got the I guess the artwork up, so you can take a look at that. It's typical Rancid, I guess.
Okay, yeah, it is incredibly typical Rancid. If you want to talk about like Timovision, it is that.
I mean, when I kind of nothing this when I saw this, I just like I could take it or leave it. But then I saw Anti-Flag was doing Maxwell Murder, and I'm like, I don't know. I feel like they could really kind of just ruin that song. But again, I'm just an Anti-Flag hater.
Do you guys think that people care about Rancid anymore, or do people just care about the golden age of Rancid?
I think people just care about the golden age of Rancid. That's just like everybody cares about The Clash, but it's all about the golden age, right?
So. Isn't Rancid coming out with a new album sometime soon?
Shut up. No. What?
I thought I heard something about
Brett
that.
Mr. Brett recorded it.
Yeah. There hasn't been any announcements on it, right?
No, and I mean, that's sort of what's frustrating about Rancid, is that like they go into these like completely not communicating with the world dark periods, or they completely focus on their side projects for a long time, and then a Rancid record comes out, and then unfortunately it sucks, and then it goes back into that realm. I mean, Rancid, I think, has an enormous amount of goodwill built up from their first, I don't know, let's say their first five records. I mean, I know Rancid, the Rancid V1 is a little bit people are here or there on it. I really like
you
it.
You mean Rancid 2000?
Yeah, I really like.
I thought
that.
Everyone loved that record. That's my favorite Rancid album.
I don't know. I know some people that felt it was like it was a that they were going somewhere interesting and Life Won't Wait, and that it was kind of safe. Like it was just like it was a
Rancid 5 is safe.
Well, safe in that like I don't
You're
know.
You're wrong, Adam. You're wrong.
I love it. The vinyl's right here. I'm looking at it. I'm just saying that like there are people out there.
Who? What people? Give me
Justice.
Names.
Okay.
John wants names.
Is it Ricky?
Name names.
No. What? You know who it is?
Whoa. I'm not even involved here.
If you ask me, let's get sidetracked. Rancid 5 is an incredibly dang maneuver because they were moving towards a more mainstream, acceptable sound, and they come out with Rancid 5, their most hardcore release to date. Hardcore does not sell records, people. I know everyone likes to act like it does, but hardcore does not sell records. Pop sells records, and Rancid took a step away from that. And let's be real, I mean, if they had done Life Won't Wait Part 2, it would have been boring as hell. You know what I mean? I mean, what do you want them to do, make a dancehall album, a dub album? I mean, if you ask me, it was Masterstroke. Masterstroke!
Hey, I agree with you. Don't get me wrong. Now, we're not going to talk about what happened after Rancid 5, which is just, you know, where you get into this whole, you know, you get a bunch of records that sound exactly like what you just said in terms of like it sounding like a safe retreat. Like I can't really remember Let the Dominoes Fall, but the one before that, the one that was
Indestructible. I actually thought Indestructible had some good tracks, but like Dominoes
it did. But like Indestructible to me sounded like it could have been like a B-sides collection or something. Like it sounded like it was like here's a bunch of stuff that sounds like what you'd expect a Rancid record to sound like. Right.
That was
like
that I felt like was Dominoes.
Well, I think they're both in that boat.
I gave Dominoes up
is
after
a very
Outcome
safe
of the
record.
Wolves.
Really? Oh, you gave up early on that.
Well, you know what? Because I was a big Operation Ivy fan. That's why. So
you're a big Operation Ivy fan, and you're getting mad at me for saying Jesse Michaels should headline over Joyce Manor?
Yes!
This is Watergate over here.
Blasphemy.
So I think that so this mythical Rancid album that's coming out in the next few years, or who knows, right? It might be out this year. My assumption that is it's going to be out in like October all of a sudden. That's what's going to happen.
That's a safe bet.
I saw them like in July, and they talked about how Brett was going to be doing it, and it's still not out. That was almost a year ago now.
Is worrisome.
Honestly, no. I see. I think they're feeling the pressure. Cause I mean, honestly, everybody says the last Rancid album was whack. The only people that say we're good are like super fanboys, which I can sort of understand. But everyone says the last one was whack.
I don't know. And I was a super fanboy. I was that person that was like out there collecting like the Japanese B-side singles and shit from Wolves and everything. Like that was me.
I didn't know Wolves had B-sides.
Wolves had B-sides. Yeah, there was a couple of those like CD single things.
I love those, man.
I always liked those in those little slim cases.
Yeah.
Anyways, there were a couple of those that were floating around for that one. Anyways, but I was the person that collected that shit, and I was really, really, really into this band. I don't know, everything after, not including after the Rancid 5 record there, the Rancid 2000. God, has it ground the care out of me.
But that, I mean, that's kind of my point, is that if they come out with a whack record this time around, it's the end. So they really got to knock it out of the ballpark. They got to pull it off. They got to pull the first four EPs. That's what they got to do.
Well, you know how I know that Let the Dominoes Fall was not a good record?
Because no one talked about it.
Well, also, they didn't play one track from it when I saw them live.
Wow. And that only came out like 2 years ago, right?
Yeah. I mean, when I saw them, it was basically like a best of mostly Outcome the Wolves stuff.
Yeah, that's I don't even know if I agree with you that the pressure's on here, because like to a degree. I mean, like, they've done so many things in the past few years. Like those, even outside of those two records, there was re-signing to Warner for some bizarre reason after they had a label that could release their stuff. When they re-signed to Warner, kind of bizarrely hanging out with like Kelly Osbourne and stuff and getting involved in that whole scene. Tim then went off and started hanging out with like Pink and tried to make himself into a pop producer. During this whole period, all of those transplants records of declining worth came out. That guy's gonna write us an email again.
Bring it. I hate the transplants. Write us an email, dude. Do it.
Right.
I thought their third transplants album was actually the best one.
Oh, it's awesome.
See, at that point, my brain had turned off to it. So, you know, and then like what else? Like, and like they were,
well,
in a way
herself,
they were prolific, but they were prolific with stuff that wasn't really leveraged. Like, you could do all kinds of side projects if you have a really good core of Rancid that's happening, right? But if you're just releasing crappy Rancid records infrequently, then if you're doing that, no one's gonna care about your fucking Devil's Brigade record that's gonna come out during that time, right? So I don't know. Like, I feel that like they've squandered so much goodwill. I mean, who had as much goodwill as they did after like coming off of Wolves?
Yeah, true. Yeah.
And it's not like, I don't know. I can't even get into the headspace of some of the decisions that they made.
But Adam, let me play the devil's advocate here, the Devil's Brigade advocate.
Yes.
Is that you're saying they've squandered goodwill, but could it be that if you look at Old Firm Casuals, if you look at Tim's daring solo releases, that they're not squandering goodwill, but they're being true artists and making daring strategies that the fans may
not
love?
Oh, God, just reminded me of those Lars Fredriksson and the Vikings records. Oh, that second one that was like the most misogynistic thing ever.
Yeah, and it had like him with like all the new girls on the inside. That was pretty bad.
Oh, I forgot that existed. Now it's in my head.
But are they being lazy, or are they making daring artistic choices?
They're not being lazy. They're being wrong. They are being wrong. They are making daring artistic choices that suck. That's what they're doing.
All right, right now, Adam, what are the chances the new Rancid records are going to be good? One is percent chance out of 100%.
You know what? I'm going to give them 40. It's probably not going to be good, but they have made really good things, so they could totally do it.
Keith Morris, I mean, the last Circle Jerks record was so-so, and then he comes back with Off. So, I mean, it can be done, you know?
Oh, it can totally be done. I'm hoping they do. I'd love if they did. I'll sing its praises from the top of the Punk News Corporate Tower. But that's, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
Ricky, what do you give it? What percent chance is going to be a good record?
I also say, like, you know, 40 to 45. And also, because I just looked up Let the Dominoes Fall, and Brett Gurewitz was also the producer on that one. And if he's doing this new one, I'm not going above, I won't go above 45%.
That album, I mean, honestly, that was just a lazy album. That album did not have a lot of hard work in it. Nikki, what are the chances the new Rancid album is going to be a good album?
I gave up a long time ago. So, I mean, really, if I was to go and give a percentage, it'd be like 35. The only way that they would actually be able to make it, they would have to do some really good promo, and they'd have to attach themselves with something else to make it sell more.
Well, fair enough. Well, speaking of a band that was never whack, a band that never fell off for over 20 years. Over 20 years, almost 25 years. The Beastie Boys are back in the news again, and they're back involved in a lawsuit. The King Ad Rock, who there is none higher, who gets 11 points on the Boggle word miter, he was testifying in a lawsuit against Monster just yesterday. What happened is Monster included it's alleged that Monster included clips from Beastie Boys songs in a promotional video for the Ruckus Festival in Canada, which was hosted by Monster Energy Drink. Unfortunately, the video actually ran like just a couple of days after Adam Yauch of the Beastie Boys died, and even said RIP Adam Yauch in it. And on top of that, the sick part is allegedly happened, what I just said. However, in his will, Adam Yauch explicitly stated, "Notwithstanding anything to the contrary, in no event may my image or name or any music or any artistic property created by me be used for advertising purposes." So what the Beastie Boys are doing is they're suing Monster for using the Beastie Boys' music without any permission at all. Apparently, this came out after he posted the article. Apparently, Monster's attorneys are claiming that they made a mistake, but the Beastie Boys aren't entitled to it's either $1 million in damages or $1.5 million in damages that they're filing for. So really, this looks like a pretty heavy slam dunk for the B-Boys, and I think the B-Boys are going to get their $1 million or $1.5, and I can explain why if you guys want to hear.
Yeah, but this isn't the first time that this has happened. Do you guys remember when Goldie Blocks got into a snafu with the
Beastie Boys? Yeah, Beastie Boys whipped him. Yeah.
I know. It's like, who does that? They were like willing to sue the Beastie Boys. I'm like, nobody does that. Nobody does it.
I just really hate that this is how we hear about this band now.
Yeah,
It's like they're all, like, the only way we hear about them now is that they're suing someone.
You mean that? Are you saying that looks bad on the Beastie Boys?
No, I just like it. It's just a shame that, you know, we're not. I mean, clearly nothing new will probably happen from these guys. It's just that this is the only news that we hear about them. And I'm not. And I supported them for both lawsuits. But it's just the same. This is how we hear about them now.
Oh, I see. Yeah, essentially, what you're saying is sad that Adam Yauch passed away early on, which I think everybody agrees with.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that too.
But I think the only reason why we hear about it is because the fact is that he's the only artist that had made such a definite decision and a stand saying, no, you can't touch my shit after I'm dead. And that's why we hear about it, is because anybody else, any other artist or musician that has passed on, all their stuff is being used and he didn't want that. That to me is the only reason why we're hearing about it. And what I find fascinating though, is because, I mean, you would think that, and I don't understand how when people are, who want to use music are not researching this shit. And then all of a sudden they feel, oh, I've got caught with my pants down. Really? Because you didn't do your research. Because if you did it, you wouldn't be getting your ass sued.
Yeah, especially Monster. It's not like it's some rinky-dink company. It's Monster. They know how to license music, you know? Yeah,
exactly. I mean, like the Goldie Blocks I could almost see because they're an independent kind of thing. But yeah, Monster, I mean, how the fuck do you fuck that up? Like, seriously. That's it. Okay. I get mad at those kind of things. Sorry.
That was really fun. The rage was really fun. John, explain to us why this is a slam dunk. Put on your lawyer hat.
Well, assuming that the statement by the defendant where they saying they did do it and they shouldn't have done it and it was a, quote, mistake, slam dunk for the Beastie Boys. Here's why. Copyright infringement is what we call strict liability. That means you don't have to intend to infringe on anybody. It means if you, like Adam, let's say you give me an image. You say, John, I made this. You can make this image a t-shirt if you want. And I do. And it turns out that you stole that image from somebody else and I don't even know it. I'm liable and you're liable for copyright infringement. Okay? So essentially in their statement, not Goldie Blocks, Monster saying, we did infringe upon the Beastie Boys copyright. Here's where the Beastie Boys nail them. If you register a copyright, one of the – and actually, you get the copyright, like you're entitled to copyright protection as soon as you create the work. So as soon as you write the song down, as soon as you record the song, as soon as you draw a picture, as soon as you write the story on a piece of paper, on your computer, you can protect that work. One of the benefits of registering your copyright with the Copyright Office is that you can get statutory damages. If I, for example, had the Beastie Boys not registered their songs with the Copyright Office, and I'm sure they have, but had they not, they could only get actual damages from Monster. Now, what would actual damage in this be? Probably, you know, a couple hundred thousand. You know, that's probably what it costs to license 5 Beastie Boys songs. But because they registered it, you can get what's called statutory damages. Statutory damages means, bang, for every work that's infringed, you get $150,000. That's how it works. So 6 works, what is that? That's 6 times 1.5 is what, 900? Is that right? Yeah, $900,000. Off the bat, no question. You don't have to prove $100,000 of damage. You get $900,000 of damages. And that's how it works.
God, I want $900,000.
Well, then all you got to do, Adam, is record 6 songs, file them in the Copyright Office, and then hope somebody infringes on them without asking.
I just like,
and they have $900,000 to spend.
I just like leave CDs around energy drink companies, and eventually one of them will get picked up. And can anyone explain to me the appeal of this brand? I mean, it's a kid's thing. I know I'm not hip to it because I'm old, but like I see trucks driving around with like the Monster
People
logo
love this stuff, man.
On the trucks, and I don't get that. Like, why is there the logo of a beverage on your truck?
I'm sorry.
I don't know. Like, who does that appeal to? Like, I don't think that. Like, that.
You know what?
I'm not being super punk rock and anti corporate by thinking that's weird. I mean, does not the general public think that's weird?
Well, you know, I knew a lot. I mean, whenever I see someone. It's funny because I usually make it a rule while I was in school, I made it, if someone was wearing that logo somewhere on them, I just made it my business just to avoid them.
What if they have
because
a tattoo?
It usually puts up like a, huh?
What if they have the tattoo? People have the Monster Drink tattoo as well.
Yeah, you know, I don't like why. I mean, I just, honestly, it just screams douchebag for me, you know?
Have you seen those photos? I love it. It's awesome.
So, like, I just used to see, like, a bunch of, you know, fraternity guys wearing that stuff. I'm like, okay, that's great. But you're walking billboard.
I don't think you need to be super, you know, like, you don't need to be Naomi Klein. You don't have to have your no logo hat on to think that's weird, I think. I mean,
no,
I get the appeal of logos to a degree. I'm walking around wearing a Clash shirt, or I'm walking around wearing a shirt with like the, you know, the logo of my local brewery on it or something like that.
So,
like, I get why people do that, but like, what brand does the Monster drink convey? I guess.
Well, so much drink.
Like,
what attributes does it suggest?
Yeah, like, what attributes does it suggest? If you drive a pickup truck and you've gone and you put the Monster logo, like, in as big as you can on, like, the passenger side rear window area, like, what does that say? Because to me, it says...
It means my children will have an IQ of less than 85.
Exactly.
Hey, whoa, hold on. My 18-year-old drinks that shit, so...
He's not wearing it, is he?
I'll tell you what.
He's not wearing it.
I saw this in the punk. I think I saw this in the punk news comment section. And I'm not really a guy that's like big on conspiracy theories. I think they're all pretty whack. But if you look at the Monster logo,
it looks like
3 Hebrew letters for the number of 6. So the Monster Energy lingo in Hebrew is 666. Just saying.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Oh. Really?
Oh my god, that's such a far stretch, but it's funny.
All right, then that's what I'm going with, because I honestly don't get the rationale.
It's a stretch.
Ricky, you can confirm for it.
So wait, what was it? What exactly was it again?
I think the Monster M. It's, you know, it's like 3 strikes, like 3 slashes. Each individual slash is Hebrew for 6. I think. Well, that's what I read, and I believe whatever I read on the internet.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Oh, really?
No, I mean, I'm just going through. See, now I'm going through the alphabet and shit, and now
it is. But it's a stretch. It's a real big stretch. But yeah,
I think it's there. Yeah, I think it's a stretch.
It's a super stretch, but.
I don't see it.
Ricky, is Satan behind Monster Energy Drink? That's the question everyone wants to know.
It's disgusting. So it's probably his piss.
You heard on the Plug News podcast, Ricky Frankel said it. Monster Energy Drink is Satan's piss. And along those lines of Satan's piss, we've got a brand new track from the Meat Men. The Meat Men are a fantastic old school punk rock band. They've been kicking around. Honestly, well, a version of the band has been around since 1973. They're led by a wild guy called Tesco V. They've got their first studio album out of new material in 18 years out just this Tuesday, so just yesterday. We've got an interview and the album stream. You can check out the album at punknews.org. Here's the first track from the new album, and I love it. It's called Men O' Meat. The album is called Savage Sagas, and it's on Self-Destructo Records. This is Men O' Meat. Worshiping the devil with a band rolled down with a 80 feet breaking deep whack on down. We're the motherfucking men of meat. Live on the Punk News podcast, and we are speaking to Keith Levine of PIL, of The Clash, of his own solo stuff. We're speaking to him live in his studio in Prague while he's recording his Commercial Zone 2014 album, which is supposed to be the finished form or the update to the Commercial Zone album from 1983. So let's talk to Keith Levine while he's recording in his studio right now. Keith, I know. I think you just stepped out of the recording studio a moment ago, correct?
Well, 10 minutes ago. I mean, I just stepped out of the room downstairs because I'm in here and I've got stuff going on, you know. So I'm in recording mode. I'm in Czech Republic, and you know, it's the CZ. And who knew it wasn't a plan? That's pretty magical.
Why'd you guys choose Prague to record the album?
Because I'd done a project here about a year ago in these very studios. And, you know, good guy, my friend Zach, our projection powder is going to be released, actually, soon. Don't know when. I mean, hopefully, maybe at the end of the year. And this will be released first, obviously. And I worked at Faust Studios before. And it's good. And I was looking for, it's funny, I was looking for an old school studio everywhere, blah, 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 blah. And it was right under my nose. And yeah, Prague's fantastic.
Well, that's great, Keith. Now, Keith, how different is CZ 2014 going to be from the original Commercial Zone? Is it going to sound radically different? Is it just going to sound more defined? What can we expect from CZ 2014?
You're going to get me now. You're going to get my retrospect. And what is weird, because at first I was going to kind of release an enhanced version, and then I was going to do something else, which was a version with other tracks that I had. And then I realized this has to be a re-record. We're doing Go-Go. Okay. And now as I'm doing it, I'm realizing I am going to revisit it. I didn't. I was just going to come in here and do the stuff now, and I've revisited 8 tracks, 6 of which are from this original release, this original Commercial Zone, which I've always found very, very unsatisfactory, a very frustrating situation. But I definitely think the album was as much as it could be for where we got to then. Okay, I didn't realize how cathartic this was going to be, but this is rendering some fantastic original stuff, which is what I wanted. It's in this mode, Commercial Zone. More Hits More is in the Commercial Zone. More Hits More is some kind of conceptual thing. I've got a Twitter account for it. you know, more hits more when I want hit records. And I've got lots of, you know, kind of bright 80s type pop songs for this. But they're not totally defined. You know, it's just a theme that's a template in my head. It's not even a template. I can hear the fucking tunes, yeah? But, you know, as I'm recording them, of course, I'm leaning them. And I know what I don't want. You know, so it's going really well. We got 14 backing tracks. I didn't expect that. And 8 of those are rendered from past stuff.
Well, that's great. Keith, are people going to say when they hear it, they're like, oh, this is a Keith Levine album? Or when people hear it, are they going to be like, this is something I've never heard before?
I hope it's going to be that. This is something I've never heard before. Wow, it's a bit like Pill, maybe. You know, good Pill. You know, I hope they identify it with the Keith Levine album. I think it's going to be the gift that keeps on giving. I want it. I mean, what's the point of making a record if you're not really serious about it? And I am. And, you know, at this stage in the game, I've got more confidence, and I know I've got the compositional power to do something really good. And it's kind of weird. I do. I feel like I'm in a little magic zone, not because I'm in Prague and it's all magic and everything. It's taken time to get where I am. And obviously, at this stage in the game, I'm always going to do the best I can, but I've got a feeling something really good's going on here. You know, dare I say, a la Sgt. Pepper, a la Smile. But, you know, they're just frames of reference, a la Tubular Bells. Yeah, Commercial Zone 2014 is a do-it-now thing, and it's ticking the boxes of the past. It's picking up from a really good point, but it's really opening the whole point. It's just like a pill thing in a way. This isn't a plan. I'm just realizing this. Want to smash it down. I'm surprised at the doors that are closed, and I hope there's a lot of people out there that are just going to welcome this thing. Oh, fucking hell. At last, an album that I can hold. It might not be vinyl, it might be, but you'll still be able to hold it, you know, and there's going to be a lot connected with the commercials on. You know, we've got 2051, we've got this More Hits More, I've got a second rendition, and it seems that all, I thought they were separate projects, and they're all pouring into this, but I can't put that much out at once. It's insane. So it's I've got to be really discerning, try and put out a good CZ 2014 release, and let's say the best is yet to come, because, you know, the whole point of doing this was to sort of be able to render the future. And, you know, I'm looking to it with 2051. Second rendition, again, ticks boxes of the past, but believe me, it's done now, and it's done with technique I haven't had until recently. And an outlook, and it seems to be even looser than I expected to be in the studio. I'm only learning this. I've only been in there a few days, and yeah.
Now, Keith, you're in there with Ted Parsons. Ted Parsons has worked with Swans. He was in Prong for a long time. I think he might have worked with you before. What's he bringing to the recording? Why'd you pick Ted Parsons as your drummer?
Ted's a good friend of mine, and I don't know about the Swans or Prong or any of that stuff. I know he did them, and I know I'm not crazy over that stuff. But I hooked up with Ted because of his teledubnosis work he did with Jason and Greg, and I can't remember the other guy. And that was really cool. They were the first file-swapping band in sort of mid-late 90s, just as the internet turned into the World Wide Web as well. And, you know, so they were file-swapping albums. And creating albums, and they did some amazing stuff, and they're going to re-release some of that. And so I worked with Ted, and I worked with him with NIC in Oslo, kind of dub projects. I thought he was a dub drummer. I didn't know he was a metal drummer, whatever you want to call that. I just don't know what it's called. But the thing is, I just thought he was a very apt guy, and you put him in my situation, and he's not allowed to do it. It just doesn't take, but you know, Ted's dub wise, I hate dub. I'm not making dub. I'm so sick of dub, right? But I'm dub wise. So I've got Ted in there, and he's just loosening up now. And what he brings to this thing is he's a fantastic drummer. He's aware of a lot of things, and this stuff doesn't come out easy because you kind of can't make it up. You can't force it to come out. You know, like Ted said, I want to do this thing, I want you to play this kind of bass line. And I'm going, no, Ted, I ain't doing it, because even if it's good, there's loads of dub bass lines. I'm sick of dub, I'm sick of this, I'm sick of that. So the thing I'm trying to get from him is his essence, and it's working. I'm getting it, you know, not easily, but I'm getting it. So what he brings to the party is some kind of uniqueness. You know, he's not a band drummer. Even though he's played in bands, I'm not saying, he knows when he's with me, this isn't about being in a band. This is about composing, and he's got the history in his head. He knows who I am. He knows who Pill are. He's into loads and loads of music, more music than I care to even imagine, let alone listen to, ever. you know, but he's done that. So great. So he brings a massive skill set. I don't think I described it very well, but I handpicked Ted and brought him over from Oslo, you know, because he's a guy. He's a guy for me anyway. And I worked with him in Prague last year. I worked with him on NIC. I've been talking to him for years. And rather than do three NAF projects that are going to leave us frustrated, I wanted this one. We were in where I am now this time last year, and he was inviting me on some project, and I said, I can't see the point. Okay, and I never said anything about this. It wasn't called CZ 2014 then, but I knew I wanted to do something. Much like The Clash, when Mick said to me, Keith, what is it you want to do? And I said, all I know is I want to get a band together, a really great band. And I didn't want to call it The Clash. I didn't care about punk rock, and that's what he wanted. And right now, I knew I want to do this. I'm doing the right project right now. It seems to have to have been now. So here we are. So, yeah.
Well, that's fantastic, Keith. I think that's a great way to close out. Last question, Keith. If people want to learn more about CZ 2014, where can they go or where should they go?
I don't know. I'm not very together with this. I'm talking to my web guy. You go to Keith Levine Live, or you go to the Indiegogo campaign that we just finished. There's updates on there. And tell you about the thing. We should have had this together, but it's been really stressful and intense, and I don't want to tell you. We're going to have a CZ 2014 webpage, probably CZ2014.com, or you go to Keith Levine Live to find out. We should have the bloody pre-order up there, but it's not. I'm hoping, where are we? Wednesday? I'm hoping by this time next Wednesday, we've got a basic page up, and I'm hoping, I'm saying on Indiegogo, help us still pre-order the record, okay? And we'll have probably two versions, a download and a basic sign numbered CD. Maybe I can't do sign number because I have to be faithful to the people in the campaign. So we just have a cool CD, you know. And really, it's all for the project still. So if you want to find out about Keith, you've got to keep living live for starters. I'm sorry we're not more together. I've got a Facebook page. I've got at Missing Channel on Twitter, you know. So there's all this kind of stuff going on. We're on Twitter a lot and we talk and say what's going on. So, yeah, and Twitter goes to Facebook. I talk to Facebook people all the time. I don't like talking about making the toast. I like talking about stuff they want to know now. I'm tired of talking about 1981 and 79 and 80. I know this is talking about 83, but it's not. This is spirit of 2014. You know, this is about now.
Well, fantastic, Keith. And in that spirit, maybe we'll check in with you after the album's released or when the album's ready to be released.
I recommend you check in again in a couple of weeks.
Keith will definitely do that. So thanks again for your time, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, bro. See you soon.
Bye-bye. And that about wraps up the Punk News Podcast.
Yeah, I think cool. That's a show. Nikki, tell people about your stuff.
What about it?
I don't know. Plug it.
Plug what? I do a music podcast, and it's a mess. You can find the show on Stitcher, iTunes, SoundCloud, a bunch of other places. Best place to go is eatks.net. And, I rant. Sometimes I blog. I'm a lazy blogger. But I'm really good on Twitter. Follow me at eatks, cause it's far more entertaining. Yeah. And that's it. I'm horrible about talking about myself. Who talks about themselves?
Me.
It's awkward.
All right. Cool.
So, what? Thanks for having me on here.
Nikki, thanks for being on the podcast. It was a blast. So maybe we'll have you go on again soon sometime.
Do that. That'd be fun.
All right. Well, Ricky, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thanks.
Adam, thank you for being my guiding light.
I know.
And as always, kids,
you
can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. Make sure you tune in next week, because we're pretty sure next week's going to be something pretty special. So be sure to tune in for that, and then we'll resume regular podcasts and after that. So that's podcast@punknews.org, and we'll see y'all next week. Come on back.